Up word of mouth Wednesday. This is our word of mouth Wednesday for Wednesday, November the 17th, 2010. It is our environmental outrage special. Tonight on the show, we've got the co-host Robin Yetzo is in the studio. Robin Yetzo will be interviewing the Senator Grant Mitchell, a Canadian senator, about the controversial topic of conservative senators killing the Canadian climate change bill, Canada's only climate change bill, earlier today. Plus, we've also going to have an interview coming up about halfway through the show, interview with Kevin Camps, a radioactive waste watchdog from Beyond Nuclear, about the steam generator radioactive cargo going through the Great Lakes across the Atlantic Ocean and beyond. Plus, we've got some of those clips from the Free Mumia Abu Jamal rally. We got the Sears lockout. We're going to be getting into the topics of even the FIFA World Cup. We got all that and more. G20 Exposed. And coming up with Word of Mouth Wednesday, Environmental Outrage, the special for today. Stay tuned. Here is the co-host, Robin Yetzo.
Hello, hello. Thanks, Daniel. So, yeah, we are going to be talking about what happened in the Senate. It was the climate change bill. This is the Bill C-311, Climate Change Accountability Act, was thrown out by the Canadian Senate after years of debates, negotiations, and hopes of a lot of environmentalists right across the country. Canada's only climate change bill squashed in the Senate just before the Cancun Climate Conference coming up next week. We have on the line to explain to us better an expert, an actual senator from the Senate who sponsored the bill. His name is Grant Mitchell. He is a Liberal senator from Alberta, and that in itself is news. So, hello, Mr. Mitchell, are you on the line with us?
Hey, Robin, I am.
Great, great. First, tell us about yourself. I mean, you're from Alberta, the home of the tar sands, and you're supporting a climate bill. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, yeah, I am from Alberta. I was in the Alberta legislature for 12 years, leader of the Liberal Party, very, very, you know, keen on environmental issues, and kind of dedicated a good part of my life to dealing with that, and a huge part of my time in the Senate to dealing with that. The oil sands are misunderstood, and I'm not saying that they're perfect. They're not, but they're not going to be shut down, so we have to do them right, and we have to keep building the pressure and requiring the companies like that, but not just the oil sands. You know, coal-fired electrical plants across this country and many other emitters of carbon have to be dealt with, because we have a huge, huge problem, as most of your listeners, I'm sure, are aware, with climate change. Now, what's important to note is that it wasn't the Canadian Senate that threw out the climate change bill that you're talking about. It was the unelected conservative senators. Everybody else voted for the bill, and it was the unelected conservative senators that threw it out. And that's unprecedented, just unprecedented, that the Senate would defeat a bill that was passed by elected members of Parliament without even having the conservatives talk to it. They had 193 days to develop and present their side of the story, and the Senate didn't do it, and didn't even let it go to committee for further review.
Senator, can you tell us a little bit more about the process of the Senate itself, just because the Senate is not a very well-known institution in Canada. Parliament, you know, is a bit better known, but the Senate not so much. Tell us about the process, about how bills pass through, and tell us about, you know, why this was, how this became an unprecedented situation.
Well, yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for giving me the chance, because it really, the Senate really is misunderstood, and it does unbelievably good work. But essentially, every bill that goes through—not essentially, in fact—every bill that goes through the House of Commons, first reading, second reading, committee, third reading, has to go through the Senate before it becomes law. And in the Senate, it goes through first reading, second reading, committee, and third reading. So it's exactly the same. Sometimes bills start in the Senate, and they can. Both government bills and senator bills, and sometimes, most times, government bills start in the House of Commons. So this bill has been passed by the majority of members of Parliament in the House of Commons, And it happens that they were the opposition members because, of course, the opposition in total has a majority. And it came to the Senate. And it got, on May 6th, I presented it in the Senate. I was asked by Bruce Heyer, who was the new Democrat sponsor of the bill and developed the bill in the House of Commons, but they don't have members in the Senate, if I would do it because, you know, he knows I've done a lot of work on the environment. And I got the Kyoto bill through the Senate when we had a majority there several years ago. But so it came. I spoke on it. A number of my colleagues in the Liberal caucus spoke on it. And then the government, after 193 days, hadn't spoken on it. So I put pressure on them to speak, and they called the question, that is the vote, and they defeated the bill.
So the representatives, the elected representatives of Canadians, passed this bill. They thought it was a fine bill. Went to you to this. I mean, not to you personally, but you sponsored the bill, and conservative members just somehow were able to not pass this bill. Like how did
they,
that?
They voted against it.
How?
Yeah, this is the Conservative Party that always used to say liberals were defeating, you know, bills done by the government that were elected to the bills. And
tell me how did it happen? Because I don't know what the makeup is of the Senate in terms of liberal senators compared to conservative senators, but how did it happen that the conservatives were able to vote this bill down?
Well, the conservatives have more members than the liberals. That's how it happened. They didn't until quite recently, but because we've had many retirees and they've been appointing, our numbers are lower than their numbers. It's as easy as that. They control the numbers in the Senate. So they can defeat whatever they want. They can pass whatever they want.
So tell us now about this bill, and it's the only Climate Change Accountability Act. Canada is headed to Cancun. Our government representatives are heading down there, as well as hundreds of environmental activists and people from this country and around the world. What will Canada have to show in Cancun without what is called the only Climate Change Accountability Act?
Well, it's you're right on. It's absolutely the perfect point. The fact is that they've got a part-time environment minister now, who was, when he was full-time environment minister, in fact, only part-time committed to it, one would think. They've had a plan, quote-unquote, which is very, very loose, but based upon what the U.S. was doing with the Democratic Congress, because they said, well, we'll do what the U.S. does on climate change. Well, now the U.S. Congress isn't Democratic. It's Republican. The Republicans aren't going to do cap and trade. So now we don't even have that as a plan. They've defeated this bill that would require that they have a plan, and they're going to Cancun in 2 weeks. What have they got? I asked the leader of the Conservatives in the Senate today, what are you going to take there? No answer. They don't have a position, except the risk is that they will try to obstruct. And in fact, at Copenhagen, that's exactly what they did. They obstructed the work of negotiators in Copenhagen because they don't want to do anything about climate change. They don't understand how significant it is, or they won't understand how significant it is to us. They say that it will wreck our economy if we do fix climate change. And in fact, if you think about it, what will wreck our economy is not fixing climate change. Climate change will wreck our economy if we're not very, very careful. And in fact, working on climate change will stimulate our economy. It'll mean new technologies, new investments, new jobs, and a vision of the future. And we're beginning to follow significantly behind many countries of the world who are getting there and understand that the future is a green industrial revolution.
Senator, tell me something about the bill, and if it would have passed, how would it have helped in curbing climate change?
Well, what isn't fully understood out there is that private members like Bruce Heyer, who isn't in a cabinet, he's not in government, can do bills, and senators can do bills too, but they can't be money bills. So that, you know, when people say, well, we can have a minority and everything's going to work, right, it's going to be balanced, well, minority governments can be stopped by the opposition, but the opposition can't initiate the kind of action that really, really, really means something. That's not to say that this bill would be useless. At all. But all the bill could do is call for the government to plan every five-year plan sequentially, every 5 years, on how to get to a 2050 objective of 80% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions under 1990 levels. And then it required accountability and review by the Environment Commissioner and the National Roundtable on Energy or on the Economy and the Environment. That's all it did. So would it have changed the world? Probably not. We passed the Kyoto Bill. Pablo Rodriguez, my liberal colleague in the House of Commons, moved the Kyoto Bill, got it through the same way as this bill got through, asked me to sponsor it, and we got it through several years ago, as I said earlier, because we had a majority. And what it required was planning and by the government and accountability. Well, all the government does is it says we don't have, essentially in their reports now, we don't have a plan, and you know, there's nothing we can do about it. Nothing anybody can do about that. That's what they do. So it would have made a difference in the sense that it would have put some more pressure on the government. It would have made a difference in the sense that if they'd actually listened, they might actually have come up with some plans that meant something and enhanced accountability, but we're going to see none of that.
Senator, you're inside. You're in the Senate. You are in regular contact with other senators. You're familiar with the system. What is going through the minds of conservative senators who are opposed to even thinking about reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in this country? What's going on in the inside?
That's sort of a $64,000 question, and it's, Robin, it's a, you know, I don't want to cast aspersions on their motivations. I mean, to a person, senators are well-motivated, you know, people who care about their communities, care about this country deeply and made huge contributions. But I don't understand how somebody can look at what's happening with the climate in Canada and the world. Look at Canada. Why do we have an Arctic sovereignty issue? Because we got melting ice caps. That's why that's more and more becoming an issue. Why do we have problems with our fisheries on the West Coast and the East Coast? That's climate change. Why are we having more drought and more rain? And, you know, and I can go on because of all those things. So I say, well, how can you look at that? How can you see the science and not understand that it's a huge problem? So I don't know. They're well-meaning people. I don't know how they can't understand that, and I don't know why they won't understand that great leadership and great leaders go and find great problems, you know, or they're thrust upon them, and they don't run from them. They embrace them, and they fix them. Churchill in the Second World War. Climate change in, you know, 2010. A great leader will grab that somewhere, somehow, and make it work and fix it.
So for my last question, they're talking about, what is the possibility of having another climate change type bill back on the discussion table in Parliament and going back through this process again?
Well, the rule is, I'm almost certain that you can't do the same bill twice in the same session. That's not to say you couldn't do a different bill, and maybe some members of the House of Commons will. I've got a climate change related bill on the order paper in the Senate being debated right now. Well, the Conservatives haven't debated it. I have, and it calls for giving people a tax credit for a carbon credit. So you know how the Conservatives brought in this deal that if you put your kids in figure skating, you can write off the figure skating fee and get a tax credit. Well, I'm saying, well, let's say we go out and buy a carbon credit that really reduces carbon. Maybe we should encourage people to do that with a tax credit. Same thing. So there's lots of different kinds of bills. I'm working on a bill also right now to require that the government have a zero carbon footprint and buy carbon credits to offset that. BC is doing that right now, reduce and offset. So there's lots of other bills that could be done, but the fact is nothing's going to be done until we change this government because they don't believe in it. They won't do it. They don't believe in intervening in any way that they don't like. They intervene in lots of other ways. In the economy and elsewhere, but they're not going to do climate change. They're just not. It is in their DNA to resist that. So we need to change government. And one of the big issues there is that the problem is the split on the left. And you know, I'll give you a figure that in 2006, 9,164 votes, just 9,164 votes from the New Democrats to the Liberals in the right ridings. And we'd have won that election in 06. And you'd have had probably Stefan Dion as the Minister of Environment and not John Baird. And so what difference would that have made to the future of this country and to the ability to provide leadership on climate change in the world? It would have been infinitely better and infinitely different. So we're fighting the problem of a split on the left, which allows Harper to win. And he had the same problem with the split on the right when he consolidated, he began to win. We have to fight that, and we have to find a way to bring people together behind the one party, the Michael Ignatieff of Liberals, who have a chance to form a government and really do something about climate change.
Senator Grant Mitchell, Liberal Senator from Alberta, thank you so much for joining us on Wednesday Word of Mouth here on CKLN.
Thanks a lot, Robin. It was great. Really appreciate it.
All right, that was, again, Senator Grant Mitchell. He was the sponsor of the Climate Change Accountability Act, originally put in by New Democrat Bruce Heyer from Thunder Bay Superior North. That bill, as you will probably have heard and seen on the news and we'll see tomorrow, was squashed by, according to Senator Grant Mitchell, conservative senators in that very, you know, obscurely known government institution called the Senate, the Canadian Senate. So that bill is now finished, ending 5 years of negotiations. Canada does not have any measures in place to curb climate change. Over to you, Daniel.
Thanks, Robin. And just getting into a music break here. This one is inspired by the G20. Thanks to Paul Corby. Shout-outs to Paul Corby for recommending the track by Freeman Dre. Funny Situation, G20. And just to let everyone know, next week we got FunFest coming up. And we got an official sponsor. If you're going to pledge, if you want to pledge to Word of Mouth Wednesday, look out for the G20 Exposed documentary. It's going to be an official sponsor for Word of Mouth Wednesday for FunFest. So we're going to have incentives like the DVD available. But this is the Funny Situation, Freeman Dre. It's a G20 Blues.
Up and down the avenue, I see the politician waving for the camera, but he doesn't have a clue. It's a funny situation, only funny 'cause it's true. Then I heard the window breaking, and that policeman got confused. He pulled his weapon and started shooting rubber bullets at some tourists coming through. It's a funny situation, only funny 'cause it's true. Station, got the riot squad and they're coming through. If you stand in demonstration, they might be coming after you. It's a funny situation, only funny 'cause it's true. Yeah, it's a funny situation, only funny 'cause it's true. Yeah, it's a funny situation, G20 Summit Blues.
G20 Blues, G20 still goes on. We had the G20 Seoul, Korea took place last week. No major announcement at the end of the G20 Seoul, Korea. A bit surprising because there was no major announcement at the end of the G20 Toronto. So we're not quite sure what these leaders are doing in their secret meeting inside, where they had their meeting in Seoul, Korea. But a lot of words on. No major announcement coming out of the G20 2010 meetings. But what we got is a major segment here that we didn't get to too much last week. I wanted to play some audio clips because it took place last Tuesday. Was the Free Mumia Abu-Jamal protest in Toronto near the U.S. consulate. And in this, I got a clip here. You're going to hear a few different voices here. You're going to hear Shaheen of the Playing Fields Connective, Wasan of Hood to Hood, which is on CKLN on Saturday mornings on 10:30 a.m. on Saturday Morning Live. And then also the host, Norman Otis Richmond, was at the rally. And Mumia Abu-Jamal is... known to publish radio essays on prison radio, prisonradio.org. And you can also tune in to Saturday Morning Live on 88.1 FM CKLN on Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. You'll get some Mumia Abu-Jamal information. But here is a bit, in case you missed it, here's a bit of what happened, the Free Mumia Abu-Jamal Toronto Rally, and especially on the topic of the Vuvuzela.
Mumia! Mumia! Must go free!
Abolish the racist death penalty!
Mumia! Mumia! Must go free! Abolish the racist death penalty!
Shaheen from South Africa.
We're talking here on the streets here. We got a lot of people here at this rally here. What do you think about the movement here?
I think what's happening in Toronto is happening in a lot of different places, you know what I mean? The progressive movement is still trying to find its feet. You know, there's been a lot of setbacks, a lot of small victories as well. I think the aim is just to keep going. You know, but what's happening in Toronto is happening in different places all over the world. So it is necessary to have these voices. It doesn't matter how marginal it is, it doesn't matter how many people, how little people show up, you know, but to keep the good fight going.
Mumia, Mumia must be free. Abolish the racist death penalty.
All right, Word Up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're here at the Mumia Abu-Jamal rally. We're right near the U.S. consulate. We're here with a guest here, Wasan. What's the word?
All right, I'm here to support Mumia. When I was 15 years old, this is the first struggle that I got involved with. The Mumia campaign in the mid-90s, 94, 95, was organized by a number of different Trotskyist groups on the left. And that was my first experiences with mass protests. And as I got older, studying the Black Panther history and the Black Panther Party, which influenced me, I got to learn about how important and central Mumia was within the party and after the party, organizing with Moon and the John Africa movement. Mumia is a legacy in himself, and this is a critical time where he might possibly be executed. He needs all the support he can get internationally, and you know, I'm just here to represent. This is my roots, and this is my foundation.
For real. And how do you think about the diversity of the crowd? Do you think there's a lot of groups uniting at this event, or is this a hood-to-hood kind of event?
You know, this is a really establishment left, you know, that is just out here, and I still think it's important for the forces that are here. You know, right now, I kind of feel like in the Black community and a lot of the young people today, a lot of the history of Mumia and of the Panthers and the Black Power movement and that whole era has been lost. And that's partly why you don't see a lot of racialized faces here. I think that we can use this as a foundation to build upon and start educating the community. You know, issues like Mumia, I'm trying to address in the music and draw the connections between defeat of the U.S. Black Power movement because of COINTELPRO and the breakdown of African communities throughout North America. So it's clearly related to Mumia and the struggles of 40, 50 years ago.
For real. And you got any music coming up?
Yeah, my second album, The Prison Notebooks, is coming out this winter. I've got production from a whole bunch of ill artists throughout the city and producers, and The Prison Notebooks is inspired by Antonio Gramsci, who was a communist, just like Mumia, and Gramsci basically developed a theory of revolutionary struggle for the Western industrialized nations, and so I'm using that inspiration to develop a hip-hop album where I'm going to focus on organizing a peace truce between Vaughn and Oakwood Bloods and D-Block Crips in the last 5 years in my area in the West End. There's been a lot of casualties of this war. And Mao talks about the contradictions amongst the people being different than the contradictions between the people and imperialism. And very much today I see the struggle as a war of position to unify all of the oppressed communities in our society against the imperialist bourgeoisie that is the ruling class of Canada. And so I'm hoping that my album is going to contribute to that kind of effort.
What's on? Word up. Tune in to Hood to Hood, CKLN, 88.1 FM.
Free Mumia.
I support Mumia Abu-Jamal because Mumia Abu-Jamal speaks for the oppressed and the voiceless. He is the voice of the voiceless. Mumia Abu-Jamal is younger than I am. But I look up to Mumia because Mumia Abu-Jamal, from prison, he seems to know more about what's going on out here than we know what's going on. He had an article about the Vuvuzela in South Africa. And everybody was saying, how in the world, how did he find out about that? Because no one knew anything about a Vuvuzela. That was right after the
spiritual to the profane.
The World Cup.
The sounds of Vuvuzelas, tens of thousands of them, have become the buzzing background for the World Cup, the mega-sized sports event held in South Africa. The Vuvuzela, as every spectator knows, is the long plastic tube-like instrument that resembles a trumpet without keys. While an omnipresent pest to sportscasters, it is a thing of joy to South African soccer fans as it reflects their sheer exuberance. This instrument, which creates a sound likened to a maddened hive of wasps, didn't begin as a tool of sports enthusiasm. It was an instrument of the Shimba religious movement, originating in the early 1900s, under the leadership of the African prophet Isaiah Shimbe, in a distinctive synthesis between Zulu culture and Christianity. The Shimbe played the vuvuzelas using the lower tone.
So we're working on a project that's essentially an impact assessment of the World Cup and the social, political, and economic effects. And what we've produced is a number of songs and music videos / documentaries with MCs and researchers and people who were actually affected by some of the decisions made by local and national government, you know, in cahoots with corporations and essentially how FIFA screwed South Africa, you know? I mean, really, this last World Cup has been the biggest profit FIFA has ever made, so to speak. Do you know what I mean?
Brick by brick and wall by wall, we're gonna free Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. The rally continues, the protests continue, and the movement to free Mumia Abu-Jamal continues, and we're going to be playing some more clips in hopefully in future weeks because I didn't get to play many of the speeches in that clip. You just heard a bit of an interview with Wasun and a bit of an interview with Shaheen and a bit of Norman Otis Richmond's speech and then a bit of Mumia Abu-Jamal's prison radio segment that from June when he was talking about the World Cup in South Africa. And just sticking on that topic, because there's a Free Mumia Abu-Jamal segment that got into the topic of the FIFA World Cup in South Africa and a little bit of something that from the Playing Fields Connective that Shaheen's been working with on this with the topic of the FIFA World Cup. Well, here is a track, Wavering Flag, Playing Fields Connective. This is the Wavering Flag.
This possessed by FIFA, gotten back by Jordan in the LOC. Oh no, it's an own goal. This is a disaster.
When there are older children, I wonder why we sold out in the name of the FIFA flag. FIFA flag, FIFA flag, FIFA flag. Borders are open to tourists from Rome, but violence goes from migrant folks from Gaborone and other zones.
Yes.
Then I got told that we'd be host. Africa's answers to Blatt's office of gangster commerce. A drive-by, but be not deceived by the feet on the screen. Look to the streets where the kickoff is mean. And we're struggling, trying to beat all the challenges of a new democracy. The money they choose, the stadium, not tools. But we should be lifting the mind.
when it silences the fighting. Me and my wife is finally smiling. Even though Fethi Makati couldn't climb in, Bafana knocked France and America is lining. Wow! Arrivederci, Italy, England ruling your Deportney, you feeling me? Africa was on the map before FIFA slavery. Seed everything in the boom, there's no kidding me.
When we are sober from all the soccer, there will go FIFA. Guess who that made the cash? And they don't put back, they never put back. No, they don't put back, no.
The enemy's ball, the penalty score. The LOC had the key, letting on goals. I heard them say, well, but what about after? How long will we pay?
Pardon me, lying to see all the artistry applied on the field. The money they choose to stay in our schools when we should be lifting the
minds. Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday for November 17th, 2010. It's about 7:32 p.m. and joining us on the line is a guest, and we're about to get into the topic of the steam generators, radioactive cargo that's being discussed right now, and we're going to get some warnings on this from the radioactive waste watchdog at Beyond Nuclear, and I'd like to welcome to the Word of Mouth Wednesday today, Kevin Camps. Hello, Kevin.
Thank you, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being on the show, thanks for all the work you're doing with Beyond Nuclear, getting the word out. With what's been going on here, we've been talking about the steam generators issue because I know it's originating in the province of Ontario, but it affects a lot of the areas around here. How dangerous is this plan, steam generator transportation plan?
Well, it does have risks all its own, radiological risks. It contains quite a quantity of plutonium, which is an ultra-hazardous radioactive isotope. And just to give listeners an idea of how sloppy a job the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission staff did in analyzing the risks of this shipment, they forgot to include one of the plutonium isotopes in their original analysis, and they only admitted their error a day before the hearings, the public hearings in Ottawa, which were at the end of September. So we just, a few days ago, the environmental watchdogs put out a press release trying to better explain to the media and the public the dangers of plutonium. It turns out if you do the math on how much plutonium is in these 16 radioactive steam generators, it's actually enough to deliver a lifetime dose of plutonium exposure to 52 million nuclear workers. So it just goes to show that the amount of plutonium in these shipments, if any of it were to escape into the Great Lakes, such as in a sinking accident of the ship, it could be a really real disastrous day for the Great Lakes region.
Right, and that's why this is such a big issue that we're talking about here. Why is this even a plan? Why are they even considering this transporting this material? Do you know what the logic is?
Well, the logic is very difficult to determine. What they claim they're doing is recycling the metal that they're able to recycle that's below a certain threshold of radioactive contamination. They're shipping it all the way to Sweden to a place called Studsvik Nuclear Company, where the outer shell of the steam generators will be cut open and stripped away, and that material would be recycled into consumer products, industrial products, and the internal highly radioactive tube bundle, which contains the plutonium in concentration, would then be returned to Canada as radioactive waste. So a whole lot of shipment with the shipment risks associated with that. And then there's the risks of the radioactive contaminated metal being recycled, so-called, into consumer products. That will also carry a radioactive risk for unsuspecting consumers of those products wherever they end up.
Right, and how about your work on this issue? Are you mainly been trying to get the word out on the risks? How has Beyond Nuclear been dealing with this issue?
Well, the great news is that there's been a real groundswell of opposition both in Canada and the United States, as well as in First Nations along the shipment route, especially throughout the Great Lakes. There's also Swedish opposition to this plan, and what we're doing strategically, we're really focusing on the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission, which is the lead agency that would have to approve the shipment. we're calling on the CNSC, and we have a deadline of November 22nd, which is next Monday, to submit our comments, calling on the CNSC to carry out the highest level environmental assessment under Canadian law. It's called a full panel review. And we think, with the Great Lakes being the drinking water supply for 40 million people in the two countries, that this certainly deserves the highest level environmental analysis. And we're doing the same thing on the United States side. The agency here that would have to permit the entry into U.S. territorial waters on the Great Lakes is called the Pipelines and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. It's a part of the U.S. Department of Transportation. And we're calling on that agency under U.S. law, the National Environmental Policy Act, to carry out the highest level environmental assessment, and that would be called an environmental impact statement. So we're also letting legislators in both countries know at the federal level that this needs to happen. So we've gotten a letter from 7 U.S. senators throughout the Great Lakes that was sent to both the CNSC and to the agency here in the U.S., and it called for just that, the highest level environmental analysis. It really called for the brakes to be put on the shipment to stop the rush. And we're concerned that this November 22nd comment deadline, coupled with a meeting just announced of the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission to happen on December 8th, this could be laying the groundwork for a quick rubber stamp, and they may still be trying to ship this thing before the end of this year.
Oh, wow. I didn't know about that. Well, that's getting press. That's pressing times, I guess. Is this an open comments, or would you only be recommending people that know about this issue on the for the comments? Like, are you recommending people to comment, or is it for?
Yes. Yeah, I would very much encourage folks who are listening to comment. And a way to do that would be you could get more information at our website, which is simply www.beyondnuclear.org. And if you go under the left-hand side menu, there's an international button. And under international, there's Canada. And we've got materials posted up there. Another great website is the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility. So that's just www.ccnr.org. Mm-hmm. And they, right on their homepage, have these materials posted. And it also includes ways that folks can get a hold of the CNSC, email addresses especially, for sending comments. And, yeah, we very much encourage everyone to comment, everyone who cares about the Great Lakes, everyone who cares about safe consumer products made of metal, because if this material does get recycled, it could mean that people are getting radiation doses just from the simplest of consumer items, from zippers on your pants to belt buckles to braces on children's teeth, you name it. If it's made of metal, if radioactive metals are entering the recycling stream, it's going to make our consumer products radioactive.
Wow, we're speaking with Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear, and I know Beyond Nuclear is based in the United States, and you had mentioned that you had 7 senators writing a letter about this issue. With what I noticed what was going on recently in the U.S., that you had the midterm elections, do you know if was this at all an election issue in the U.S., this issue?
Well, I don't know that it rose to the level of... Yeah, of that, unfortunately. We still have a lot of work to do to make politicians and even the general public realize how significant these issues are. A real ironic turn, unfortunately, was that the lead senator, Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, a Democrat, all 7 senators who signed this letter were actually Democrats. We did get a Republican House member to make a similar statement, so it is a bipartisan effort now. But unfortunately, Senator Russ Feingold, probably the most progressive member of the United States Senate, lost his reelection. So I guess no good deed goes unpunished. He really took the lead on this letter. And we're going to, you know, continue to work with the other 6 senators for sure, and we're going to try to expand that effort out, like I say, into the Republican Party as well. Some good news from election returns. There was, for environmentalists, there were a lot of bad news. There was a lot of bad news from Election Day, but... Even the loss of a seat by the Democrats in the state of Illinois, the new senator from Illinois is Mark Kirk, a former House member. He's a Republican, but he cares about Lake Michigan. And we're going to definitely meet with his office as soon as possible and try to get him to take an issue. A part of what's getting the attention of senators is the precedent that this could set. Senator Feingold, for example, the leader of this effort, is on Lake Michigan. Wisconsin is on Lake Michigan. So not on the shipment route for this steam generator shipment, but it sets a precedent. And actually, the U.S. Department of Energy has proposed, under its now canceled, fortunately, Yucca Mountain dump plan, to barge high-level radioactive waste on Lake Michigan. And Senator Feingold knows about that, and he's very concerned that this steam generator shipment will set the precedent for larger numbers of radioactive waste shipments on the Great Lakes, but also higher-level radioactive waste shipments on the Great Lakes.
Wow, wow. Well, yeah, so this is getting into, we're getting into a big issue. We're talking about a large amount of area when we're talking about the entire Great Lakes region. But I actually wanted to ask you about something that's going on here locally, because we're getting a lot of headlines about the nuclear issues in the past few days, because Dr. Helen Caldicott has been speaking close to Toronto in Oshawa, Ontario, and she has been advising residents of Port Hope, Ontario. The headlines are about suing the federal government due to exposure from radiation, and she advised people living in the Port Hope area to move, and then she made mention that the Lake Ontario is being contaminated currently. Have you heard about this? Are these concerns about Dr. Helen Caldicott's trip or at all?
Well, just in full disclosure, Dr. Helen Caldicott is actually our founding president at Beyond Nuclear.
Oh, awesome.
So there is a connection there between us. She's now retired back to Australia, but she does make it to North America on speaking tours like this. And I think she makes some good points. It's very tragic that Port Hope is significantly, severely contaminated. All of the uranium that's mined in Canada is sent to Port Hope for processing, even the uranium that's exported to other countries like the United States. So there's contamination throughout the town. It's kind of a unique situation in the fact that the nuclear facilities are right in town. And even the waste disposal facilities are problematic. For instance, there's a dumping ground for wastes that are radioactive and toxic, and there is a drainage pipe right out into Lake Ontario from that still active dumping ground. And in fact, there have been some instances of dumping right in the lake that have taken place over the decades. So the contamination is severe, and it's of great concern. And I think that the federal agencies should be held to account for what they've permitted to happen there for so long.
Wow, wow. And I guess just to finish off on the right note here, and to get people keep people thinking about this. And I know you were speaking with Kevin Camps. You've been quoted in major media, and you've spoken all over the world. You've testified before government officials, and you work with Beyond Nuclear. Is there anything that you could recommend that people do? Any last research? Any final words?
Yeah, I would again encourage listeners to go to the website beyondnuclear.org, as well as to the website ccnr.org. Not only to learn about the radioactive steam generator shipment proposal and take action, but there's so many other issues throughout the Great Lakes. Ontario is the most nuclear neck of the woods in all of North America, unfortunately. There's 20 reactors in Ontario, some very close to downtown Toronto at Darlington and Pickering. All of these reactors are very dangerous, and we need all the help we can get, the anti-nuclear movement, to shut these places down before something horrible happens.
Really, yeah. Thanks a lot, Kevin Camps, for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation, Daniel.
All right, thanks. Yeah, and that was Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear. The website, once again, beyondnuclear.org, or also check out the website ccnr.org, the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility, which Dr. Gordon Edwards is one of the members of that. We've interviewed Gordon Edwards in the past. We've interviewed Dr. Helen Caldicott in the past. And now we've interviewed Kevin Camps. And we're still going to be talking about this issue, because we're talking about a major steam generators, radioactive cargo shipping along the Great Lakes, up the St. Lawrence, across the Atlantic Ocean to Sweden, that could be happening, occurring, as soon as within the next few weeks before the end of the year, was the warning that we just got there from Kevin Camps. So, stay tuned for more coverage of that. And I think we'll be right back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. Just going to play, just to finish off that Wavering Flag track by the Fields Connective, and we'll be right back.
I heard them say World Cup is the way, but what about after how long
Word of Mouth Wednesday. Just a song track there that was related to FIFA. Now we're going to move into the topic of Sears. Surprisingly, Sears is a top topic because there's been lockout street actions all throughout a lot of North America, as you'll hear from this interview. But this interview actually took place in front of the Eaton Center. And the Eaton Center, there's a large Sears on the corner, the southwest corner, the same corner that usually Toronto Truth Seekers are on Saturday afternoons, and also a lot of other people out there. Free info on Islam, free info on, well, there's info on Christianity, info on, now there's info on Sears, on the Sears lockout, because there is a group of the United Steelworkers Union and locked out workers that have been locked out from the Sears plant. This is an interview here with Wayne Ray from the United Steelworkers, and here, without any further ado, you'll get some info. Why are you seeing protesters rallying in front of Sears, handing out flyers about Don't Shop at Sears campaign? Well, you're going to find out. Here is the Sears Lockout Toronto Street Action radio segment.
Sears Canada has turned into a greedy corporation, a corporation worth billions of dollars, and they're picking on 500 hardworking people that work in the city of Vaughan. They would not be able to make the $240 million they made in profit last year without the people in the city of Vaughan, because we run the largest logistics center for Sears Canada in the whole country.
All right, word up. It's Daniel Libby here, the Word of Mouth Wednesday, and we've got a guest here. We're on the streets here at Yonge and Dundas Square. It's a Saturday afternoon. Do you mind introducing yourself?
I'm Wayne Ray. I'm with the Steelworkers. I'm representing the USW workers 9537. Been on locked out against Sears Canada now for 7 months. These families, 500 workers now, have been on strike for 7 months, and they're trying to get back to work. This Sears company is owned by one person. He's collecting multi-billion dollars in profits off these people, and what we're trying to get is a fair deal. We're trying to get a pension. We're trying to get a fair pension, fair benefits, and keep our wages and keep our vacations. That's the main struggle that we're in right now against this company.
We've got to cut into their profit this year to let them know that people do care.
So we're on the streets here near Eaton Center, right near a large Sears right here. And I noticed you guys got some flyers here. What are you handing out?
We're handing out flyers here that basically talks about the struggle. And we're saying to the shoppers, not only are we saying, let's get these families back to work, we're also seeing Sears credit card, and we're seeing they're showing the 29.9% interest rate on them, and not to shop at Sears.
What is your involvement at? Because I know you mentioned you're with the steelworkers. I guess, how are you out here?
Right now, I'm a president of a local 6200 in Port Comer, the Valley Inco, but I'm here supporting these people in 9537 because I was in a vicious battle myself and with Sudbury as well. With Valley Inco, we were out on strike for approximately 1 year, and when the steelworkers came to me and asked me for help, I said wholeheartedly I'd come and give these people a hand to get their jobs back and get them back to the table. what we're trying to do is force this company to bargain fairly. They're in Canada. They have to realize they have to go over the laws of our land and bargain a fair contract in a collective agreement.
Right, and I see a lot of the signs are saying, please don't shop at Sears. So I guess you're targeting the Sears and at the Christmas time shopping time? Or?
Exactly. What we've done, what we're going to do is right across Canada, right in the United States, we're going to be targeting all Sears stores. In the last 2 months of the year, Sears makes 80% of their profit. What we're going to be doing is coming after them for this next 2 months. We're going to be hitting them every weekend right across Canada, right across the states. In the states, it's called Black Friday. In November the 26th, we're going to be doing big campaigns in United States as well, because what they do, that's their biggest shopping day there. And we're going to be going after Sears there as well.
Eddie Lampert, a billionaire, $30 million he's worth. He's the first man in history to pay himself $1 billion in wages. And that's obscene as far as I'm concerned. What he's doing here to these people here it should be against the law. It's definitely immoral.
Right now, these people in Vaughan are being affected because they have scabs and they're doing their work. So what we have to do is get this government to stand up and say to Canadians right across the country, not only just in Montreal or Quebec and in BC, we have to have anti-scab legislation in place right across Canada.
Right, and how many people would you say are involved in this? You're talking about Canada and America. How big is it?
Well, the steelworkers alone have about 800,000 members. We're going to be putting out a robocall to all of our members across Canada and across the states, talking to not only our members, but our retirees, their families. We're going to get that message out to Sears and let them know that we're not going to stand for this. They need to get back to the table and bargain fairly and not dictate policy to us. Their share prices have already dropped from $30 down to $19, almost $20. So they're going to start to feel the pinch, especially in the next couple months. We need to get back to the table and get a fair deal for these people.
When you know that these corporations are trying to financially rape you, the people will stand up and they will help you. I'm going to coin the new term, financial rape, and let it get out there on the airwaves, because that's what these multinational corporations are doing all across America and Canada and Europe. They want to get rid of the middle class. They want two classes of people in the world, the poor and the rich. I'm trying to say something. I'm not asking them to give me anything. Just stop stealing from me.
Word of Mouth Wednesday, controversial segment, hardcore segment from the locked out workers of Sears. It's a campaign. Please don't shop at Sears is what it says on the flyer. This holiday season, shop anywhere but Sears and support the 500 workers who have been locked out of their jobs for the past 7 months. So this is a major issue here, talking about the United Steelworkers, talking about the Canadian Shoppers Coalition, and talking about 500 workers that have been locked out of Sears. I think I heard there's some content on the Word of Mouth Friday. Good to hear some more details on this. So this is sort of a follow-up to that, because on the weekends, if you're downtown near Yonge and Dundas, near the Eaton Center, you'll see the anti-Sears protests getting the info out. And you can also check out the video of that interview that we just played on the Toronto Media Co-op if you go to toronto.mediacoop.ca for the video of that interview there with Wayne Ray and the Toronto Street Action on the Sears lockout situation. And this is CKLN 88.1 FM. And we're
calling
going
all CKLN listeners and supporters. This is a crucial time at CKLN, and we need your help to keep the station and its diverse programming on air for another year. Every fall, we ask you to show your support. FunFest 2010 starts Friday, November 19th and ends Sunday, November 28th. All the programs at CKLN will be asking you to call in and make pledges, and there will be tons of prizes, giveaways, and raffles. Volunteer to be a part of FunFest 2010. Hit us up at funfest@ckln.fm. Or call 416-876-4848.
Word up. So CKLN Fun Fest taking place next week. Stay tuned for our Fun Fest coverage is going to be taking place next week on CKLN 88.1 FM. We got G20 Toronto Exposed as one of the sponsors, official sponsor for Word of Mouth Wednesday. So we're going to have some incentives as well. So we'll have more info on that next week. But I just want to make sure that we thank Robin Yetto for his interview there with Senator Grant Mitchell, Canadian senator, at the start of the show, and also thank Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear for the interview, and then this episode of Word of Mouth Wednesday for November 17th, 2010, we got into a lot of issues. We talked about the unelected conservative senators. We're talking about the prison industrial complex that's holding Mumia Abu-Jamal. Talk about the FIFA World Cup in South Africa, corruption, and the Canadian nuclear industry was a target. Also, the Sears Corporation major moves here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. This has been the Word of Mouth Wednesday for this week, and we're going to leave you before we throw it to the Blue Remedy with the guest host. Mr. O'Brien is going to be in soon, but first, we're just going to play Do What You Love by Illogic, and make sure that we say support all good people that care about the earth and what's going on. Here is Do What You Love by Illogic, and my name's Daniel Libby, and Word Up, this is the Word of Mouth Wednesday. See you next week. Word up, word out, word out. Stay tuned for Blue Remedy.
Every day I wake up and give thanks for this life. Life, it's but a dream, a spirit, a ghost inside the machine. Like a river, it flows gentle as a stream. The rapids come rapidly, we see the knowledge we find within its shore. Swim upstream if you choose to ignore the signs around you, it's time to explore the nature of being. Bust down the doors, sing your song, yeah, write the score. Through the sunny days, even if it pours, break free, the heavens soar. Liberate your spirit, I implore. Concentrate and hear it, you can't ignore. Hesitate, we hear it, we all are born. Take on fear where we all are on the river of life. Better love what you're doing. Do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. I said, do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. Yeah, life, it's like a love affair. Into my lover's eyes I stare deeply. Yeah, she can keep me on the plains of existence. You can meet me, I'm seeking truth. That's why I'm speaking ever so freely, ready to greet the new day with a wink and a smile. Salute the sun. All the while, all I've done, I compile, let it float down the river. No denial, we're just dust in the wind. We all are born and all will face the end. But there's no reason to be sad to experience this moment. I'm so glad, never let it drop, go to waste. Love every step, cause it isn't a race. Do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. I said, do what you love and love what you do, and reflect the perfection that's inside of you. Yeah. Sometimes you gotta take that leap. The universe will catch you and keep you moving the way you gotta be, what you gotta see, who you ought to be. Cause we all got our destiny. This is just life testing me. We all got some stress, let's see. No money, no home, won't let it get to me. I do what I love.